Hey, everybody. This is Carter, and welcome to this very cool episode of Making It Up. This is a conversation series where I sit down and chat with other writers, and we talk about process, journey, roots of creativity, all that good stuff. I find, I find writers to be very interesting, and I'm not saying that because I'm a writer, but I find their journeys very interesting. I'm not as interested in necessarily any specific book that they've written. I just want to hear about, you know, how did they get here? How did you make that decision to sit down and write a book? Why did you? What were you possibly thinking? And then what was your journey like after that? And everyone's got a different story. And there's always some connective tissue, I think, between all of that. And so I was really particularly interested to talk to today's guest. So today I talked to Hannah Nicole Mayer. So she has just come out with her debut novel, Assistant to the Villain, which is kind of a comedic, fantasy-ish, probably hard to stick in any one genre, even though it is kind of listed under science fiction and fantasy book. But the genesis of the book is interesting. I don't want to give out too much because Hannah will get into it. But the roots of her story began as TikTok videos, just random thoughts that she had, then that started to tie together into a bit of a loose story. And then she decided to sit down and write it. So she started her agent and editor search with a completed book and a couple hundred thousand TikTok followers. So there's kind of a built-in audience, but as we kind of underscore a lot in this episode, you still have to be a good writer. You still have to have a compelling story that's well-written. It can't just be because you're popular on TikTok that you're going to sell a lot of books. But she is a good writer, and she's written a compelling story, starred reviews from different trade magazines. So she kind of has this perfect storm. And so out of the gates, hits the New York Times bestsellers list. So, it's so interesting and exciting to see something like that happen. It's like, wow, you really made it work. And obviously that's a quick path for a lot of writers. It's being from somebody who's 20 years into this writing business and has not hit the New York Times bestsellers list. But it's so fascinating to see A, you're a good writer, and B, this story just hit, and it helps that you have this built-in audience, but, you lightning in a bottle kind of a situation. So it's very, very cool. She's a tremendous person. I had a fantastic time talking to her, and we made up a fun little story at the end that that made us laugh, and it really isn't all that matters. So enjoy. I think you're going to like this one. This is my conversation with Hannah Nicole Mayer. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I am doing well. Happy Friday.
Yes, happy Friday to you. Thank you so much for moving the time. I really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, not a problem at all. And just to get this out of the way, can you pronounce your last name for me? Because I'll be repeating it.
Absolutely. It's spelled weird. It's just Mayer.
Mayer.
Like a horse or like, Mayer.
Right. Mayer East Down.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a funky spelling for a really easy pronunciation for some reason.
And Hannah is a good name. I've used it twice in my books. And with my third book, Hannah was the protagonist.
I love it. I love it. I'm fond of it.
It's worked out for you. Yeah. It's soft, but it also has a kick-ass element to it somehow for me. Like,
oh, I love it. Okay, I'll take it.
So where are you?
So I'm based like right outside of Philadelphia area.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. How about you?
I'm in just outside of Boulder, Colorado.
My best friend lives in Boulder.
Oh, it's really?
Beautiful there. I'm
you
obsessed.
Come out to visit from time to time?
I do. Yeah. I'm actually planning a visit in December or January to go see her. We're obsessed with the Boulder bookstore.
So I was there on Sunday, they celebrated their 50th birthday.
Wow.
So they had a bunch of authors come in and kind of take over different rooms of the building and stuff like that. Yeah.
Love it.
I've done several launch events there, and they're fantastic.
Yeah, I every time I go, like the ballroom at the top, I just like want to live up there.
Oh yeah, yeah, totally. Something is about the smell of books.
Yes,
it's such a heady and specific smell.
Yes, that's why I'll pick them up and like take a whiff. And friends that are not readers are like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like,
"You're acting a little weird."
getting the aura in, like I'm really taking it all in.
So, are you from the Philly area?
Yeah. So I'm actually from Allentown, Pennsylvania, which is about an hour outside of Philly. And now I'm sort of bouncing back and forth between my parents in near Allentown and King of Prussia.
Okay.
Which is near like it's like the second biggest mall in the country, I think.
Right.
Not a problem for me at all. I don't have issues being that close to the mall. So we're about a half hour drive, I think, into the city.
Okay. Right on. And then when you're growing up, siblings?
Yeah, I have three brothers.
Okay.
And then I had my mom's older sister lived across the street, and she also had four boys. So it felt like seven because we were
interesting.
Each other's houses so much. Yeah. So testosterone.
Yeah, you grew up in a very male dominated area, at least. But I'm sure you held your own quite well.
I did. They really prepped me for life. I feel I was like very well equipped to enter the world because I was like, there's nothing anyone can say.
You had a rough and tumble childhood.
Yeah, it was great.
And what were your parents doing when you were growing up?
My mom stayed at home with us for most of our childhood. We were very fortunate that she was able to do that because not everybody has that. She's a nurse, an RN. So she worked until I was born, and then with three kids, and then I have a little brother. She was like, I'll take a break from work just until you guys start your school. And my dad is a podiatrist, so he's a foot doctor.
Okay, yeah. And there's no break for your mom. Your mom had the harder job for sure.
Yeah. I'm like, she's like, oh yeah, I left work. And I'm like, you left work? You were home with four kids all day. Yeah,
you were begging to go to an office.
Yeah. She was actually super excited when we were all back to like go back to work. So she loved it.
Oh yeah. It's
absolutely.
It's tough, man, with little kids and just trying to juggle jobs. And I remember sleeping in my car at lunchtime just for like half an hour of some kind of sleep.
Do you have kids?
Yeah, they're now in college. So,
oh, that's great. I know where my parents are at. They're like, you're all out of the house.
Yeah. As of this month, I'm an empty nester. Now I'm like, where did everyone go?
Quiet.
Yeah. So I got a dog. So now that's keeping keeping me busy. So you're growing up in the Rust Belt and you're getting beat up and throwing blows yourself to your brothers. Were you, not to use a trite word, but were you a storyteller kind of growing up? Were you plays for your parents and all that kind of stuff?
We have like videos of me and my brothers as well. So we have our fireplace was like a hearth. So it was raised brick. So it presented like a stage. We were like,
awesome.
This is our stage. We're going to stand on it and perform. And there's like so many videos of me standing on it, reciting Goldilocks and the Three Bears.
Mm-hmm.
Big one.
Classic.
My showstopper, really. But I would forget like the story plot halfway through. And I'd like turn to my mom and I'd go, right? Porridge, right? And she'd go, yep, keep going. You're doing great. It was, oh my gosh, storytelling was like the biggest part of my childhood. It was every night before bed, my parents would come in and they'd tell us a story like they do. But my dad was really into like making up the stories as we went. So they read us storybooks, but his big one that I still think about all the time was about Larry the bug that lived under our swing set. And Larry was like a constant feature of our stories. Like every night, we want a Larry story tonight. And he'd be like, all right, Larry's going on another adventure. And Larry also had like a sister that was a ladybug named Lily. And he had his two parents, and I would take like an Alice in Wonderland type mushroom and shrink down to bug size. And he would let me add in story elements, though, as we went. So,
choose your own adventure kind of a thing.
Yeah. He was ahead of that time for sure, back in like early 2000s. So that was a huge part of my childhood. And I fell in love with doing it. And I would find myself doing it with like my own storybooks. I'd be like, what if this happened instead? And then in school, they would start having you do like short story narrative storytelling as you like grow up. And those were always my favorite assignments in school. It was always where I excelled. I I really struggle with focus. It's been a struggle since I was really, really young, and attention deficit issues that I discovered later in life. But I was like, oh, that's why I couldn't like pay attention to anything.
Right. When you were a kid, it probably wasn't so easily labeled or identified as it is today.
Absolutely. Especially, I think, too, especially in women, it can be underdiagnosed, particularly.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I think because it presents differently in women than it in men. I think a lot of people with like attention deficit or ADD or ADHD assume it's always hyperactive, and it's not.
Oh, there's several different flavors of it.
So many different.
Yeah, I've become very aware of it through my own kids as well. So
yeah. So it can present so differently. So I discovered that later in life, but it made so many things like from childhood click where I was like, my God, that makes so much sense now. I struggled so hard. But the writing stuff was never, I was able to like fixate there because I was so interested and in love with it. So those were always my favorite assignments in school. I always had like the absolute most fun with them. And I never stopped. I kept going. And I literally remember telling my mom at like 9, I want to write a book. And she was like, then write a book. So I would like, you know, do it on like printer paper and or I'd go into PowerPoint and try to like make like a book in PowerPoint and then print it out and like staple it together.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because kids like yourself growing up who express creativity, you know, most kids do one way or another and some take it pretty far, like making little books. But the idea of actually doing something with that as a grown up is not, it doesn't even sink into the mindset because it's kind of such a distant, like you see books on the shelf as a kid and you have no kind of realization that somebody actually wrote them. They're just books, right? So it's hard to conceptualize yourself producing something that you've seen on your bookshelf for years and years and years. And I'm guessing that maybe it was the same for you. I don't think you went to college to study English lit.
I didn't. No, I actually went and I had wanted to do creative writing. I had said a few creative writing. And I wrote, you know, I took creative writing classes. We had some really great extracurriculars at my high school. So I took journalism and then I took creative writing. And I had told myself that's what I want to do. But I was told by a lot of people, oh, you can't make a living creative writing and you're not going to be able to make money. So you should probably major in something that you can get a job in when you graduate and you can always write on the side. And I took that advice like very seriously. Mm-hmm. I was like, OK, so I had wanted to major in creative writing, but I was like, all right. And I believe everything happens for a reason. Mm-hmm. I don't regret not doing it. Would I have loved to? Yeah, but you can't go back. So there's no point in dwelling. And to be honest, I think it worked out really nicely. I ended up majoring in psychology. Mm-hmm. Which I was also incredibly interested in. I always wanted to do something to help people. I really thrive off of helping and doing things for others. And I really wanted to learn about the way that the brain works. And I've struggled with mental health since I was really, really young. Mm. So it was also something I wanted to be able to like help other people with, the way that like the professionals in my life have helped me with the issues I deal with.
So there was the potential thought of you kind of keep going down that road and maybe becoming a therapist or something like that. Yeah.
And I had worked with kids since I was like 15. I've nannied on and off since I was since I was 15. So I particularly was like, oh, maybe I'll be a child psychologist. Maybe I'll help kids like, because I started developing the issues that I deal with at a really young age and I had no idea what was happening and nobody knew because I didn't know how to vocalize it.
It wasn't necessarily a genetic, oh, I've seen this in my family before kind of a thing.
Yeah. And I mean, there are mental health issues in my family. I just think I was really good at picking up what I was supposed to be doing and feeling or expressing. And I would just mimic that. And so I think a lot of people didn't realize like, hey, she's really anxious right now.
Right.
And I would have very like snowball effect thoughts. And I didn't really understand like, why is this happening?
So kind of like a generalized anxiety disorder kind of.
Yeah. I struggle with that. And I struggle with depression and amongst other things that I've dealt with over the years. But it's all like, right. So I thought I would love to help, you know, help kids out with this and their development and things like that. So that was originally what I was intending to do. And I did use my degree. I worked in a school for about 2 years. I was a education specialist, but I worked a social work company that worked primarily with youth. And it was great. I would go in and I would teach a program called Second Step. It taught empathy and we talk about big feelings. And I really felt like this was like something I wish I had had in school. So I love to be able to impart it to kids and help give them coping skills for when you have a big feeling. And they put a big emphasis on like, there's nothing wrong with having a big feeling. Like that's part of being human. But we can learn to manage it so that it's not so uncomfortable. Like really, really great tools. I loved doing it. And the kids were always super receptive and so much fun. And kids are so creative. So they made me want to be creative.
Yeah, and there's no boundary on them. There's no shame. There's no, I don't care what I say. And it's beautiful.
Yes. They're so funny. And they say like introspective things sometimes that you're like, gosh, you're like, your little brain is just amazing. Mm-hmm. So it was truly, I truly have no regrets because that major led me there and I had such a great experience doing that. And it was absolutely so much fun and great. And I really do feel like it helped me in my writing as well because psychology plays into so much of like how you write realistic characters and what your characters
100%. Are. Yeah. And that was the point I was going to make. Hearing you talk. And my daughter is a psychology and criminal justice major, but that psychology part. And also, if I could give advice to anyone going to school who was eventually going to become a writer, it would probably be journalism and psychology, which is what I did. Because journalism will let you, you can learn how to write without taking classes, but most of it's just writing a lot. You get your million words in and you're like, okay, I think I've got this down.
Yeah.
But journalism will give you that practice of like, how do I make this pithy and succinct? And psychology, to your point, especially if you're already coming at it, at writing with maybe a deep well of empathy yourself, I think that begets some profound writing because it does become much more of a what would I do kind of a story and where readers can really attach to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, my God. And I was writing papers like twice a week in psychology.
Yeah,
and it was great.
Yeah,
it was wonderful. I loved it.
So then what? So then you finish, you get your degree, you've done some work, but you're still telling stories.
I'm still telling stories. I was writing a lot on the side, like writing fun things. I remember there was like one particular class that, this is terrible, but it was like, they put the PowerPoint up. It was one of those classes where the professor would just read off of the PowerPoint the entire time, very monotone. And he posted the entire PowerPoint to like the school website or whatever, I forget, Canvas or whatever we used. And so I would learn it. And then I was like, during class, I'm like, I'm here, but I've already learned what you posted because you've already posted the entire PowerPoint for the whole year.
Totally.
So I teach it to myself first. And then in my class time, I would go on my laptop and write. And
I thought you were the most studious one of them all. She's just constantly making notes.
No, I was like, she's so focused, and I'm like writing about dragons and like that.
Right.
And I'm like, because I already learned this before I came. So it was, I was constantly writing and I was constantly thinking about writing. And when I graduated, I was working, I had ended up doing my senior thesis class separate from the rest of my classes so that I could start working full time. And I was working full time as a nanny for twins. And they were like, that was just the most amazing experience because they were a month old when I started and they were two when I left.
Really bonded.
Yeah, yeah. And I still go up to visit because I moved back home, which is quite a drive from where I went to school. Mm. I still go up and visit them all the time because you just become such a big part of their life. And their family was just absolutely wonderful. I became like a part of the family and I still think of them as like my second family. And so when I was doing that, I was constantly thinking about writing. I only had one class at the time and it was like one paper a week. So it was super low maintenance. And I was just constantly thinking about it. And then I found TikTok during the pandemic. I think most people found it during the pandemic. My roommate was like, you got to download TikTok. You have to. And I was like, I'm going to be like on it all the time though. And I shouldn't do it because I'm going to be like addicted to it. And she was like, just do it though, because what else are we going to do? We're in the middle of a pandemic. So I downloaded it and I found like the book side and I like fell in love with it. I like found so many creators that I really enjoyed, and they would post book recommendation videos. And then eventually I was like, I want to start posting bookish videos. I feel like it would be fun and it's a good creative outlet. So I just started posting about my favorite book tropes. I posted about Bridgerton because Bridgerton had just come out. I talked about the Bridgerton books. Mm-hmm. And eventually, like over the course of doing that, I built like a following. And then I started posting like comedy bits. Mm-hmm. So I would do like, this is what it would be like if I was in an enemies to lovers romance. And like, it was a complete disaster because I'm really sensitive and I something new to me. And yeah, so I kept doing them. I did like, if I met the morally gray fantasy villain, because I was obsessed with morally gray fantasy villains. I was like, they're just so interesting
characters. Well, morally gray, anything is interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Like from a psychological perspective, it's super interesting.
And it's realistic.
And it's realistic.
Everyone's morally gray.
Everyone is morally, that's what you learn as like you become an adult. Because I think you think of the world very black and white because this is good, this is bad. So this is what you think the world looks like. And then you like grow up and you're like, wait a minute.
Right.
That's not quite what it is. Yeah. I was saying this at an event last weekend, and I was like, we're all sincerely, if we look at villains and we look at their like backstories, we're all just like one bad day away from becoming
villain. Yeah. And the only thing more interesting than a hero who's morally questionable is a villain who you kind of like.
Yes, absolutely. And oh my gosh. And I feel like in media now, all of the villains are just like attractive. So you're like even more conflicted because you're like, well, he did that, but he's got dimples.
Yeah, yeah. So it balances out.
I can't really be mad at him. So I was trying to like continue to think of like funny bits. And then I thought I almost did a video where I was like, this is what it would be like if I was the assistant to a fantasy heroine. And I was going to be like, you know, you know, 10 a.m., you're going to learn to sword fight in 2 seconds. And at 11 a.m., you're going to let out a breath you didn't know you were holding and things like that. And but I had so many more ideas for like a villain, and I just love villains. So I wanted any excuse to make a video about a villain. So I did. I did one just like walking around my apartment. I remember like I knocked on the bathroom door like it was an office, and I was like, sir, like, do you need me to clean up the blood before we like go to our morning meeting?
Yeah. Totally. It's kind of an Austin Powers-ish Dr. Evil kind of thing in a way.
It's like very like poking fun at like what the morally gray fantasy villains do in like all of the books that I love. And I love to laugh and I love humor and I love poking fun at things that I love because I think it makes them even more enjoyable and more fun and even lightens things that can be heavy. So I became obsessed with the idea, and then I filmed that video. I went to like my nanny job, sitting in like the playroom with the twins. I had like the video edited on my phone. So I like looked down, post it, and I put my phone down to play with them. And then when I put them down for their nap, I get like a break for a little bit. So I like go on my phone and there's all of these comments and just a hit. And everybody like was saying like such funny things, and I was like interacting with people in the comments, and I was like, this is really special. Like, this is a really special thing. I felt like I like remember thinking that from the beginning. And then that I continued to post them. It was so much fun. And I was writing something else at the time. I was like, I'm going to write a book. I want to be an author. And I kept writing, but I was like not into what I was writing at the time. I was like trying to find the passion for the story. And I was like, I'm excited about this story idea. I just like can't bring myself to like sit down and do it for some reason. Something's like holding me back. And I was constantly thinking about the skits then because I was doing them 2 to 4 times a week. I was posting these episodes and I was just having such a blast. And it stopped being eventually like little bits, and it eventually being me. It was like I was playing a character, like this bubbly character, and the villain's like this grumpy, like sardonic person. And mind you, it's just me yelling at a wall. Like there's a person.
Right.
I mean, the villain is totally there. There's totally
right. Right. We're not talking $100 million budget for these films.
Yes. It's literally me and my phone camera like yelling at a wall.
But that's, I mean, just to interrupt real quickly, that's important though, because you know, and we'll get into this maybe a little bit, but like one of, you know, as you probably know, you know, social media is such a thing for authors in turn, and it's such a battle for most authors. And you know, they'll be hearing this. I'm like, well, how am I going to film? They're like, well, it's not hard. What she did was very basic, probably didn't take, it took her more time to think it up than to actually execute and post. But it doesn't have to be this crazy thing. People just want to have a laugh, have a little bit of an insight, whatever.
Right. Exactly. And I think the biggest key too with social media is like, don't overthink it, because sometimes the videos that I put like the most effort into don't do as well as the ones that take me like 2 seconds to film, two seconds to post. I think I made a video once in the Barnes & Noble parking lot, and I was like, I was talking about like people saying that there's nothing in books that you can't get from real life. And I was like, then where are the dragons? Like, tell me where the dragons are. And it took me less than 2 minutes to film it, cut it together, and post it. And it has like over 1 million views. Yeah. And I'm like, but that's right. It's such a luck of the draw sometimes. And sometimes it'll just be like, you just have to have like one idea that like boosts or takes off. Yeah. Social media, you should never, it's hard not to overthink it. I do all the time, but it is a learning curve for sure. And it doesn't have high production value. Like, it's sincerely was just my phone camera, walking around my house, like yelling.
Yeah. You don't know what's like, once you have a following, you can have some kind of confidence that like, okay, this is going to do
Absolutely.
But without a huge following, you just never know. I might do all these long videos about riding and then throw one in of my golden retriever and that's something. You never know. But I think people can tell. I think this is what authors struggle with. It's like you said, they overthink it, and they also are doing stuff that they don't enjoy, which is a mistake. I've been told this, so I tell when I teach, you know, find what works for you. Find the thing that you like. And it's, you don't have to do everything, but it's so obvious. And I won't name names, but I've seen plenty of author videos. I'm like, you're trying too hard. I don't think you're enjoying this. It's not organic. You just feel like you're fishing for followers and for likes. And that inevitably never works, in my perspective.
It's so hard too, because I think it's really easy to get caught up in what you think you should be posting. And it's easy to see like, oh, I should be doing that, and that's what I should be doing. And that's totally valid pressure that I think like everybody feels at some point. But I definitely think that that's great advice though, because I think that the videos that I'm the most like, just me turning it on, I cry a lot. I'm just a crier. I cry when I'm happy. I cry when I'm sad. I am crying so much because so many exciting things have been happening with the book, and I want to tell like the people that have been following along about it, and I'll just be crying and excited, and I really feel like people see that and get excited with me, and it's super special and super, and I feel like I see too, like if I see somebody getting excited, or I'm like, I'm excited too, like I'm excited with you, and I really feel like that does come through, and that's the best too, the best balance with social media, when you're posting stuff that you enjoy posting, because it's genuinely a joyful thing for you. But it's totally understandable to fall under the, I feel like this is what does well, so this is what I feel like I should be posting. That's super valid.
Right.
And fair.
So, and then just going back to your story. So, you know, ultimately your love of what you were creating on TikTok was the seed of a new story.
Yeah, it really was. And it was extra special because I felt like I had this like little community of people that were like making jokes about the characters with me. And it felt like, I was like, this is such a rare thing. And I was so like grateful to have that outlet because I was struggling. I have ebbs and flows with my mental health. I was away from my family. It was during the pandemic, so I was pretty isolated. All my friends had left.
Right. So without mental health issues, that's can be devastating to a lot of people.
Yeah. So I was alone a lot of the time, and it's not great for your mental health to be alone all of the time. I love being alone. I think it's really healthy to have alone time. It's great. I really enjoy it. I think that I was struggling with it, and it really gave me like a creative outlet to focus on and to get excited about. And when you struggle with depression, it's so fun to be excited about stuff because you can't always muster that feeling when you struggle with like the chemical imbalances and stuff. So something I was always so excited about and so excited to post about. And it was just such a creative source of joy for me that after a few months of doing it, I had been like saying, I'm going to make this a book eventually. I told so many people, I was like, I'm going to write this into a book. I'm having so much fun. I love the characters. I was like, there's a whole story in my head from this, just from these videos, because eventually it stopped being like little bits. And it started being like, there's Blade the Dragon Trainer, and there's Becky in HR, who like is always giving the assistant a hard time, and rightfully so, because she's like running around the office, like causing chaos. And the villain who's like secretly in love with her. And that like became like the whole thing. And I was like, all right, I'm just going to sit down and see like what this would even look like if I wrote like a couple chapters. And I sat down and I stayed there for hours. Mm-hmm. And I, the most words I've ever written in one sitting. I've never been able to repeat the experience. I keep saying like, I wish I could have her back. I don't know who that girl was. It wasn't. Mm-hmm. I would.
Yeah,
like,
there's something about that first book that just, and it's a little bit about not totally knowing what you're doing, which is you're like a child, you're learning for the first time, but there's something so joyous and the sense of discovery that to your point, it's a one-time shot.
Right. Yeah, it was unreal. My mom like came into the kitchen and I was like hunched over at my laptop, like my back was like in a terrible position. And she was like, what are you doing? And I was like, don't bother me, like hissing at her, like, leave me alone. Uh-huh. And I had so much fun that I was like, this was so fun. And I sent the first two chapters to like two of my friends and they were like, write it. I want the next chapter, write it. And I was like, okay, all right. So I put the other project down and maybe I'll pick it back up again eventually. But this was like the most fun I've ever had writing anything. And I wrote like two full manuscripts before this that I, you know, were mostly practice or me just like playing around. And this was like the first time I really like wanted this to be the best thing ever. And I had so much fun doing it. I remember like filming videos of me, like I'd take a break because I just wrote a chapter that made me giggle and scream and like run around the room like I'm losing it. And but I would do that around something that I made. I was like, ah.
Right.
Like, you said that.
Right. You're not doing that about your day job. Nobody's doing that.
Right. I was like, I felt so, it was just such a source of joy. And writing the book was like how I felt making the skits. I was like, wow, the feeling is just carrying over. And it feels like all these characters that I already know, I'm finally meeting them for the first time on the page. And all of the things that I imagined the villain saying back to the assistant, because he's not in the videos, obviously. I was able to like finally write like this is how he was responding and this is what he said. And I intertwined a ton of little Easter eggs from the series into the book because I wanted it to be a new story, meaning like it doesn't follow the exact. I've done like over 200 of the skits.
Mm-hmm.
So it has a couple different storyline plot lines throughout all of those episodes. And I really wanted it to be like, here's all the characters, here's like the world, little world we've built, and here's like all of the salutes are in here. But it's a new plot, like it's a different storyline overall. It's still like an office, it's still the villain's office in a fairy tale world with his sunshine assistant. He's grumpy, but they're solving a different problem here. So I wanted it to feel new for the people that had seen the skits, but still really familiar. And then I wanted somebody that had just picked it up to be able to also. And it was oh gosh, it was just like so much fun. Even like doing the little Easter eggs, I was like, like someone will get this.
I'm kind of fascinated by just this journey, because you know, if there is a typical writer's journey, and there's no typical one, but it would be you write with shame. You don't want anyone to see it. You're embarrassed by it. You don't know what you're doing. And you pray and pray and pray that you can find an agent. And you know, and maybe you get one after 80 rejections, or you don't get one at all. But you don't come out of the writing experience with already a built-in audience from another media source. So that's really cool. And I'd like to hear what happened, but I assume if you start going to writing query letters, for example, and put in there, I have 200,000 followers on TikTok who love bits of this story. I mean, that rises to the top of the pile, I assume.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Having social media, I think, especially in traditional publishing now, they love when you have a social media following or when you're able to post on social media because it helps promote your books. I was very aware the entire time writing it of like what a rare experience this is that I have people rooting for this book while I'm writing it. And I tried to like every day not take it for granted because I'm like, this is just such a precious, special thing that I am able to interact like, and people are like, I'm excited. And I'm like, how like humbling is that, that I'm writing a book and there's someone out there that's excited to read it and wants to read something that I wrote. It's just absolutely unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And sharing like little quotes from the book. And I would have people be like, oh, I'm so excited. And I'm like, that's for something I made. Like, that's
it, yeah, it's a little bit of an out-of-body experience for sure. When you're listening to people talk to each other and you're kind of overhearing them talk about your stuff, you're like, wait, that's my shit that they're talking about.
Yeah, like
it's really weird.
It is. It's so amazing. But yeah, it is. It's super out-of-body. It's super humbling because I'm like, I just like, that's so amazing. And even when I would do the skits, I would have people comment like, this made my day or this made me so happy. And I'm like, God, that I have the power to like make someone feel joy is so unbelievable and so cool. Yeah, absolutely amazing. And then, yeah, so I shared my writing journey. I made like an announcement video because it felt like we had a following that was in love with this series. And I was like, I have to tell them that it's going to be a book. So I announced it. And then I would do like periodic writing updates. And I at the time I hadn't decided if I was going to go traditional or self-publishing. There's so much merit to self-publishing. I wasn't sure what track I was going to take at the time. And I ended up deciding to do traditional. And I think that's really writer dependent. It depends on like,
totally.
Yeah, what you want. There's pros and cons to both.
But with your audience, your built-in audience, you would have had definitely a leg up self-publishing compared
absolutely.
To most. I mean, that's,
absolutely.
I mean, kind of both routes, really, you have that leg up, but that's the hardest thing. Self-publishing is the hardest thing anyway, is finding your readers.
Right.
You know, there's so much competing for everyone's attention. And if you're self-publishing without any kind of marketing dollars behind you, it's tough. But if you have a huge following somewhere, that's at least a good starting point.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I kept writing. And then right before I finished the book, I was reached out to by my agent, actually. So he emailed me and had seen one of my videos. I think someone had shown him my videos and was like, hey, you might like this book, sounds like right up your alley that this girl is writing, or something to that effect, I think. And he messaged me and said, hey, when you're done and if you'd like to submit your manuscript to me for consideration, I would love to read it. And I was like so flattered and like honored. I was like, oh my gosh, that's so exciting. So when I finished, I did send it to him. And then I also queried, I think maybe like 7 to 10 other agents. I wrote my query letter. I sent it out. I got some passes. I got some asking for like the first 10 pages or first 50 pages or however. It really is so dependent on like who you queried.
Sure.
So I was waiting to hear back from my agent, who I ended up, spoiler alert, I ended up signing with, the agent that emailed me. And then I, when he finished the book, he was like, oh my gosh, I loved it. I thought it was great. Super funny. Like he was so, so excited and passionate about it. And he kind of matched my passion for it. So like,
which is what you want.
Right.
You know, same thing with editors. You want to be with a house or with an agent that is a champion for your book, not just be another book that might have potential, but they don't really have a lot of passion for.
Yes. Yeah. And my agent is just like, he like just shows it so much, like how passionate he is about projects. And he just made me feel like so much more excited. And then so after he offered, I, you know, reached out to the other agents, and I did have another agent offer for the book, who was also incredibly kind and really excited about it too. I ended up going with the initial agent just because it felt like we connected right away, and
sure.
We both had the same level. It was a difficult decision, but I feel like I made the right choice. And I just, my agent, I love him so much. So, and he was, again, he was just like such a champion for the book. And he just understood it so well in the same way that I understood it. So it was really, it really fortuitous. And then we spent the summer getting the book ready for submission. And then he, you know, made the list and then sent the book out. And then it was just a lot of waiting after that. And I thought of, you know, there's no guarantee with social media. Unfortunately, they have to really like your book to want to, you know, sign it on and work with you. So I got quite a few rejections, actually. And I it's part of the process. I was told that by quite literally when I got
my first three books didn't sell.
Really?
I had an agent, but my first three books didn't sell. The following nine did, but it's, yeah, you just got to keep moving forward and it might not be at all, to your point, a reflection of the writing, that you can get rejected for a number of different reasons.
Yeah.
Usually it's just like, this isn't right for us at this time. It's timing. It's what they're looking for. It's what the market is looking for.
Yeah. And this book is so, I feel like, unique genre-wise, because it's
hard to place, right?
It's hard to place it, for sure. So I think that for sure was a factor. And then some just like disinterest, which it really did help me, though, because I feel like it does help you like grow as a writer when you get like that first rejection. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, and
like,
but you learn from it.
Part of it. You learn.
You have to embrace it. Not even just passively accept it. You have to embrace it, I think, to really grow from it. And I, because otherwise it can crush you.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm really lucky, because anytime that would happen, I would have my agent, you know, still keeping me motivated and keeping me excited. And I had really great friends that are also authors that would give me the same advice. Like, this is part of the process. You will never find a writer that has not been rejected at some point in time. It is sincere how it goes. So we, a couple months, I can't even remember what I first heard. So we went on submission in August, and then we heard back from two publishers. So again, like I say that, but I have so much to be thankful and happy about.
Your journey is very unique. It's not completely unprecedented, but it's not the typical path. Is not getting an agent and a book deal with your very first book quickly, right, and then having it, you know, hit so well when it comes out.
I'm very, very aware of how privileged and fortunate this I am to be, like, to be here. Like, it really is like, it sounds so cheesy. It's like a dream come true. And I keep saying that.
100%. It's a lifelong dream come true for most writers.
Yeah, it's incredible. And then we ended up with the best possible publisher, who it all felt like fate. Like, it really did, because I was like, they understand the book so well. So we ended up with Red Tower, which is an imprint of Entangled Publishing. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, it's a completely women-run publisher, which I loved that. And like from the get-go, I was like, that's amazing. And
didn't they do like, isn't the first edition like it's physically, they've done some cool things with it?
Yeah. So they're everyone on the team is so creative and super awesome. So they have all of these amazing ideas. And with my book, first of all, the cover was like, I cried when I saw it, because I was like, this is literally what I pictured in my head. You guys.
Wow.
Elizabeth Stokes was our cover artist. And she just knocked it out of the park. Like, when they showed me, I cried, which is not surprising because I cry a lot all the time. But I was like, this is just the most beautiful cover I've ever seen. I wanted it to look like a whimsical fairy tale, because I was like, this is what it is. It's like, it's campy and it's funny and it's, but it also has some dramatic moments and some sweet moments, and it's romantic. And I was like, I really want it to look like a fairy tale whimsical cover. And they just absolutely did that. I mean, I wish I had the book next to me. There's like little books at the bottom that say like monologuing, evil for idiots. Like, the little details on it are just hysterical. And they did. Yeah. So for the first print run of the book in the U.S., all of the books have red sprayed edges, which is super, super cool. Somebody made me like scream the other day, because they were in the videos, the assistant always wears, and in the book as well, she has like a signature red lip. And somebody was like, oh my God, it's red like the red lipstick. And I was like, I didn't even put that together.
They'll always find things about your books that you would never even thought about.
Yeah, I was like, did my publisher know that? Like, are they that good? Like, it was just absolutely.
That's fantastic.
Absolutely amazing. Yeah. So incredibly creative team of people that I feel like, again, I'm like, I just feel like I should be like, I don't know what I need to do to like show my gratitude, because I really am working with like such a great team of editors, and they understood the project like right away, and they were so excited about it right away. So yeah, that's sort of, and then now here I am, and it's in the world, and it's absolutely incredible.
And I think it's worth underscoring, you very lightly touched on it, but it's really worth underscoring the point you made about, you know, it's great to have a lot of social media followers. It's great to be known, but your book can't suck. You still have to be a good writer. That is the absolute minimum thing you have to do, is the book has to be good. All those other things are great, and they might even help drive sales, but maybe not. But none of it happens if it's a shit book. And that's so important. And that's why you kind of had the perfect storm of events, but it mattered that you knew how to write. because there's a lot of people who probably could try to write a book and have a huge following, and then it's just like, well, I don't want to read that. It's not, these people still need a good read. So, you know, that's, you know, and I know you've gotten star reviews and things like that. That, man, that matters. You know, to get to have a good critical reception as well as a popular reception.
Yeah, I in every way have just been like, really, honestly, I just keep saying,
been waiting to wake up, aren't you?
I every day I'm like, I think someone's like, how do you feel? And I was like, I don't really know what's happening right now. I feel like I've just been like going through this whole thing. Like, what is going on? Every 5 seconds I'm like pinching myself. Like, I'm going to,
but it's no accident, right? Like and you're on the younger side, and I've talked to writers of all ages, but one thing out of all these over 100 episodes I've realized is if you are a writer, it will come out of you. If you're truly meant to be a writer, it's going to come out. No matter how hard your efforts are to stop it and go study accounting or whatever. And this was meant to be for you, because you've always been a storyteller, and there maybe have been different paths along the way, but they all lead to the same place eventually. But it still takes your time, your effort, you know, let's not underscore the fact that it's not easy to write a book. As much fun as you're having, it's a lot of work.
It is. Yeah.
And then I'm sure not all those days you were laughing and crying in a good way.
Some days I was crying.
Right. Because you don't, is this all random scenes, or is there an actual arc to the story? You get so deep into it that you can't really see it anymore. And it becomes very frustrating at times. So I think worth underscoring that you kind of went through all that and ended up with a good book.
Oh, thank you. I reflect all the time too about like the whole writing process itself. And I'm like, I had so much fun, but there were days where I was like, if you guys don't start, it really felt, and I have had this conversation with my friends before where they're like, the characters are not doing what I want them to do. They're not listening to me. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You're in charge of them. They're not listening. And then when I think this was the first time I had experienced that, where I'm like, you need to go here by this chapter, or this whole thing is going to get messed up. And that character said, what if I go over there? And I'm like, no.
Right. Well, the what if is a very powerful tool. I mean, because I don't outline, I do that all the time. Every chapter is a what if. And some of your what ifs you guess wrong, but that doesn't mean and you might go down a road for a while, and then you have to go back and like, well, there's 10,000 words I need to cut, but okay. You know, at least I recognize that it was the wrong path rather than stubbornly sticking to it, even though it was going to lead to the edge of a cliff.
Yeah. And there were so many scenes like that where I was like, this is not working anymore. And it would be a scene that I was like attached to, and I'm like, I love this scene, but it doesn't make sense, especially after you go through a couple rounds of editing and like, stuff in the story changes and you're like, this scene no longer has purpose, so it should not be here, but it makes me giggle, so I would like to keep it if I could. So those are the scenes that I'm like, I'm banking this, and I could maybe use it later at some point in another book or in the
next. Or it's just more practice words.
Right. Oh, right. Exactly. Exactly. That's such a great way to look at it, too. And I love what you said about that if you're a writer, like, it will come out of you eventually. And yeah. I think that's so true. Like, I have so many friends that are really, really talented writers. And that's sort of how it happened for them as well. Like, they took other life paths and yeah. and were authors. That's and
what happened to me? I didn't study writing. And when I was 33, I just started writing one day and I haven't stopped. And it's just, and I had no aspirations. I'm like, well, you know, but it does take you having to look at yourself with curiosity and say, why did that happen? You know, what is the meaning of this, rather than not giving it the thought that it deserves? Because that's how you go down the path, is by being curious about it and being introspective about it. So, but yeah, it just comes out, man. That's weird. Yeah.
It is so weird, because it just will. It just always
yeah,
does.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's awesome. Well, Melissa, we're going to wrap up. Before we do, we're going to do our own little quick storytelling.
Yeah,
this is the fun part of the show. The show is all fun, but this is the part that makes people nervous.
I'm a little nervous, but I feel like
I've got to do it every time. So this,
I'm comfortable.
If it's a shit show, it's a shit show. We're totally okay. So I picked out three random books off my bookshelf. You're going to pick one of them. We're going to pick a random page. I'm going to read a sentence from that page. That's going to be the first sentence and maybe a 2-minute long short story. So I'll read a sentence, then you just tell me what the next one or two or three sentences are. Then I'll do it and I'll call it when we're squirming. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Douglas Adams. Classic. This is a buddy of mine, Shawnee's, who wrote The Feast of Panthers. And Rebecca Taylor's thriller, The Secret Next Door. So choose one of those.
Okay. Maybe it's because it's the last one I saw, but why don't we do The Secret Next Door?
Secret Next Door. All right. Yeah, it's a good kind of suburban, you know, what's going on behind closed doors kind of a story. You know, Rebecca's a very fine writer. Give me a page number between 1 and 330.
1 and 330. We'll do 200.
Okay. And then I'm going to quickly scan to see if there's a good opening line. All right. So I'm just going to read this and you do whatever you want.
Okay. I'm nervous.
She had absolutely no idea what Jessica was going on about the fucking neighborhood Facebook page.
Oh my gosh.
And I go first if you want to.
Could you go first? I'm like blacking for some reason.
So I'm going to read this again. She had absolutely no idea what Jessica was going about the fucking neighborhood Facebook page. Jessica always wanted the attention on her. So of course she was throwing a tantrum for all the neighbors to see. But she didn't know what Jessica didn't know, and what only she knew, was what Jessica's husband was doing.
Oh. Well, he was down at the parent-teacher conferences flirting with Mrs. Shelley.
Of course, everybody flirted with Mrs. Shelley. But Dan, Jessica's husband, was particularly overt about it. She had seen him when she was there for her own kids' parent-teacher conference. And now, as she sits at her keyboard, reading all the comments Jessica's making on the Facebook page, she's really tempted to say something to the entire group.
But instead, she uncorks a bottle of wine and has a couple of glasses. And throughout the night, reality starts to blur together. And she doesn't even notice when she opens the laptop back up and sees the light shine onto her face, and does not quite remember the next morning what she begins to type.
When she returns to her laptop in the morning, she opens up the Facebook page, and she's almost glad that that was the first thing she saw and not all the text messages waiting for her on her phone. She blinks hard as she sees the words, just a few simple words that she wrote into the group. Dan's a man whore, she had written. All right, we can call it there. I don't know where this is going.
An episode of Desperate Housewives.
Oh, haven't we all been there?
We've all been there. I'm like the Facebook
God damn it, Dan. I know. See, that tied in. We did a little social media tie-in, and it all went back great.
Really, like, we linked right back to the beginning.
Well, Hannah, what a pleasure talking to you. And it's I was excited to talk to you because, you know, it's just an interesting journey. And it's you know, and I'm glad we're able to kind of dispel some of the myths around social media for writers, because I know it is a huge source of frustration. And really, you know, the takeaways are you still have to be a good writer and do what you like. Don't force it.
Yes. So true. It's super easy to fall into like the pressure traps, and it's super valid to feel frustration. It can be very frustrating.
Yeah.
Valid stuff. But yeah.
Well, congratulations on your success. And hopefully we'll meet one day in person. And I'm excited to see what comes next for you.
Yes, it was so lovely talking to you. Thank you so much.
Happy weekend.
Yes, happy weekend.
Bye, Hannah. Bye. So that's it. That is my conversation with Hannah Nicole Mayer. I told you it was a good story. I liked that one. That was an exciting one. So she is fantastic. I told you were going to like that one. If you want to know more about her book, Assistant to the Villain, or if you just want to watch her videos on TikTok, where she has a massive audience, just go to at Hannah Nicole Mayer, M-A-E-H-R-E-R. I know it doesn't spell quite how it sounds, on TikTok and Instagram, and you will find out all about her. So that's it for now. Please check out my website. It's willcarterwilson.com. You can buy my book, sign up for my newsletter, check out my events, all that fun stuff. And I will say we're starting to market my upcoming 2024 book, The Father She Went to Find. So if you go to my website, it's been beautifully redone, so you can see what it looks like now, and it'll be featuring my new thriller. So check that out. More episodes coming out soon. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.